G'day. Welcome to SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ McCumber, and every 2 weeks we talk search engine optimization with the world's leading SEO practitioners. We interview a mix of in-house SEO leads from the world's biggest brands and SEO thought leaders, many from leading search technology brands, plus the world's foremost SEO educators. They'll all be lifting the hood on their own SEO journey, as well as sharing the tips and tricks behind how the best and brightest minds in SEO go about their trade of dominating the SERP. SEO nerds, this one's for you. Hello and welcome to another episode of SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ McCumber. I am your host. I'm in your ears every 2 weeks talking to the world's best SEOs. Now, I've got Gus Paloja, SEO from Indeed, on with us today. G'day, Gus. How are you?
Very good, Russ. Thank you for inviting me. Let's have a nice chat about SEO.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I circled Gus as a really great candidate to chat to a while ago, and it's taken a bit of back and forth, I think mostly on my part, just to get this lined up. So I'm really excited to chat to you today. For those that have listened to one or two of these episodes, or if you like the look of the guest lineup that we've had over the last couple of years we've been running, I highly recommend you hit that subscribe button just to make sure that these keep showing up in your feed. If you enjoy the conversation, love you to write a review on Apple or Spotify, Google, wherever. I think Apple's the big one that we're pushing on. Now, getting into the meat of it, and the number one question, the main question I ask every guest when they appear on our show, Gus, what do you feel is the number one biggest challenge facing SEOs in 2024?
My answer is going to be a cliche because everyone is on the AI world now, but I think SG, if goes ahead or when it goes ahead, because it seems that Google took a step back there, and I'm a little relieved that it's not happening yet. I think there's a lot for us to learn and understand how it's going to work. It's exciting, but it's also very scary at the same time. So yeah. I think once it goes ahead, that's going to be a huge challenge. And also in the AI universe, I think the fight with the AI spam, it's going to be huge as well. Like, we see a lot of people trying. You see websites succeeding for a while and then disappearing. And we have some public cases on this scenario, but it doesn't mean that everyone is actually happening that exactly same way. I think Google will tackle this and it won't let a word of spam take over. And they'll find creative ways to, find other sectors, or they call EAT, or they'll find other ways to protect the search results from a lot of spam. But I think that's going to be a challenge that is going to stick with us for some time.
I think so. Did you see that study that came out just earlier this year? On, people are worried that the search results are just not as trustworthy as they were previously. And there was a big long-term study, which was done. Had you seen that?
I haven't seen the study, but I do see a lot of comments on that direction as well. I haven't seen that same way. Like, when I'm not using my SEO hat and I'm searching for things, I usually find what I'm looking for, and it works on a way that I'm expecting in general.
Yeah.
But I do understand, like, I'm seeing a lot of complaints from people in the SEO world that results are getting worse.
I think we've got a lot to get through, but this is a good conversation point. I think, like, I'm not an on-the-tools SEO, I'm an SEO strategist, but, like, I think the way you and I search versus the way a normal person searches is quite different. Like, we know how to structure our phrase. I have this conversation with my wife all the time where she's trying to find something and, she just can't find exactly what she needs. And I just know the little tweaks to put in there to actually get the relevant searches. So I feel like the big spam issue is for the people who don't know, just the way that they probably need to structure that, which is a gap for Google to obviously solve.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. I think there'll be a fun exercise to do, like, a run with our parents and get them to Google a little bit and see, how do they do their day-to-day Google. We're deviating a little bit already, but I remember many years ago, there was this guy in Brazil who trolled his dad and said Twitter was Google, and his dad was essentially tweeting things unaware, and there was it was a big website, so he told a lot of people. So the answers he was getting were actually people that knew about the situation and were trying to help, like, oh, let's try to help this this old fella that doesn't know much about the internet. And then he wrote a huge story about it. But it was interesting. Like, it was, I don't remember the exact questions, but I know he wanted to buy churros, like the Spanish churros in his hometown. And he didn't search for anything too odd, but it was an interesting concept that let's trust humans to give us the answers and not websites. But yeah, I never thought from this angle, like, how does the average person searches, right? We tend to look a lot at Search Console, and we maybe already do some of that proxy, right? We are not with the people searching, but we look at the terms that are being searched. But still could be an interesting exercise to see how different parts of SEO get affected with this.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Very much. We are going to be talking today about Indeed. You've been there for about a year and a half. So where are you based?
I am based in Dublin, Ireland. I've been here I'm from Brazil. I moved around a lot. I lived in Argentina and Holland, and I've been in Ireland now for 7 years. And here I worked for a few agencies. Loved the agency side, but we're going to talk about this later. And at some point, just happened to go in-house, and Indeed was looking for someone, and I knew someone who worked at Glassdoor that recommended me to the person who is my boss today.
Got it. So for those not, because we've got a pretty, you know, pretty widely spread audience across the US, Australia, and Europe. Indeed's very well known here in the US, and I'm guessing it's pretty well known in Europe as well. It's the world's largest, I believe, job posting, job marketplace.
Yeah. Indeed is the number one job website in the world. I think most people will know us for job searching only, but there are plenty of other things inside Indeed. You can, as an employer, you can find candidates, you can do your whole interview process through Indeed. You can search through CVs and find qualifications or certifications that you're looking for and that kind of stuff. So it's interesting, once you get inside, you see, you know, how many things that happen in the background beyond just, let's just search for this thing and find the jobs that are available in this area. There's a whole lot of work for this to be very simple.
Yeah, for sure. I must admit, when I first started using it here, so I'm a user here for our agency here in Austin, in Texas, I thought it was just a posting site. And then you get set up and you're like, oh, wow, there's this whole back end of running the whole recruitment process from start to end, from like actually outbound outreaching to potential candidates, to dealing with inbound, to running them through an interview cycle, grading them, all sorts of things. So I guess that's the way the tools like this, you have to evolve. You have to keep people sticky, and in it, you need to find other ways to get them engaged in the platform.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of our jobs as SEOs as well, right? We don't want just people to come find something on your website and disappear. There's always a goal bigger than just a visit. And that's the same with Indeed. Like, our core or main goal is to help people to find jobs. So everything we do, it evolves around that area.
Indeed's great now, and we'll get there. But let's talk about where your sort of marketing journey. Like, what was your first, did you come from the marketing side or tech side? Like, what was your first foray into?
I was actually a journalist. I'm a graduated journalist, and I worked in some big publications in Brazil. I had a blog on MTV. I wrote about almost not everything, but a lot of things in the entertainment world. What else did I do? My dream was to be a music journalist, and I would do this on the side. I published a couple of books independently, had a blog on MTV, wrote a couple of times for Rolling Stone Brazil. And
cool.
And then after that, I wanted to live abroad for a while. And that's how I moved from Brazil to Argentina. And as those things happened, I don't know what's your journey to go from Australia to US, but I wanted to stay a few months and learn Spanish. And I thought if I come back after 3 months, I come back with a new skill. I fulfilled that need to live abroad and really live a different culture. But things worked well. It's been 12 years and I kept moving countries. And I got really lucky with people around me and be really open about what I wanted to do next. Like my first marketing job was at the Spanish school that I was studying. And I just happened to be on a dinner with other students and I mentioned to them, oh, I'm looking for a job. And someone mentioned, oh, I think they're looking for interns in the school. So I became an intern, even though I was already graduated and had worked in, you know, big newsrooms for years. Moving to a new place, you take a step back on that as well. And then the owner of the school recommended me to an OTA, online travel agency, that was the biggest one in Latin America at the time. I got a job there. That was my first actual SEO job. I was literally typing what is SEO shortly before that and kind of trying to understand. But they needed someone that knew a bit about writing and could speak Portuguese and Spanish. And it turns out that in high school, I also studied IT. So I knew a little bit about how to make websites. I was making websites on Dreamweaver and Firework websites that are very, very heavy today. You will never build a website like that anymore. But, you know, first week at the job, reading the SEO, the Moz Guide to SEO, and understanding that one side was content and links, and the other side was a little bit technical, and there were those HTML tags that I knew how to code from zero. It was like a perfect storm. Like the two things that I studied on a new niche that I had no idea about. So I kind of discovered myself in this new universe, and it's been 12 years now, having been back to journalism since then.
Wow, very cool. That's funny. You show your age a little bit there when you said Dreamweaver. I'm like, well, hold on a second.
Yeah, it's
interesting too about the journalism background and music journalism specifically. I was a freelance music journalist in Australia, and I dreamed of having something. And I had friends who featured in Rolling Stone, and they were guest journalists. And I dreamed of having something published there. It never happened, but my background coming to SEO was also more from the copy side, the content side. So that's interesting. You mentioned then that you had moved into, you know, some agencies. So tell us a bit about your agency experience. Were they small, large? I think you worked at one of the big ones, didn't you?
Yeah. So I worked in two agencies in Ireland. One was a group called Core, and it is the biggest marketing group in Ireland, mm-hmm. but they do a lot of offline. So I think maybe we were, I'm spitballing here, 200 people in there, but I was the only SEO. So a lot of people were doing TV, radio, out of home, cinema, you know, all the traditional advertisement. And there was a branch doing online as well, but it was mostly PPC. So both of my managers were really good at PPC, and mm-hmm. there was nobody on the SEO side, even to fight with you, with the clients. Mm. You know, I would get the budget to do audits or to present things, but getting things implemented was a different step, because some of the brands are so big that I only had a little time to sell something and try to convince people that were, you know, looking at a lot of different things at the same time. So in the same conversation, you would have, here's the radio campaign we're going to do, and this is the SEO part. So it was, you know, it was great to try a lot of things, to spend a lot of time analyzing websites and planning, but I wouldn't really implement as much as I wanted. And then I moved to Wolfgang Digital, that is a smaller agency, but it's a digital marketing agency. So I moved from being the only SEO to a team of 15 to 20. I don't remember the numbers, but it was a very big team. So suddenly you have a group of people that's, you know, you can't just say whatever and, you know, someone's going to question you. And I was looking for that. Like, I was hungry to have that communication and that conversation with people that, well, maybe they agree with me, but maybe they disagree. Maybe they've done differently and it works. Or maybe what I think is the right way to do something is completely wrong, because I spend a lot of time auditing and reading, but not as much implementing on that first agency. I've done a lot of implementation before working in-house, but on this first agency time, it was a little frustrating at some point. That's why I decided to go to a smaller place, but where I would have a bigger team that was a lot more hands-on.
Very interesting. And very interesting just around like the difference between, you know, having lots of time doing audits and analyzing and trying to put a business case forward to actually implement versus, you know, more time actually implementing. And because how can you experiment and test anything if you can't actually get traction and get into a site?
Exactly. Yeah. I think there is a case that I can't forget about it. I worked with a bank and they wanted to rank well for the mortgage page, but the mortgage page was no indexed. And I was like, hey, this is why you don't rank for this. This the page you want to rank. You don't allow Google to see it. We can't let people see this page before they fill a previous step. It's like a legal step that they have to do. It's like, but I can't see all of your competitors. They do have this page on Google. This is what people want to see. It was even before I had this idea of a SERP analysis, or, you know, this became a very interesting topic and a big topic. But I would just look at the result and say, hey, this page has to be here. People are looking for this. And then after a long time, I left. They never did it. The bank doesn't exist anymore. But it was like, this is such a simple win, right? You're just going to remove a little tag from one page. I didn't really believe in the whole legal story because everybody else had it. So if that was the problem, you should see, okay, all of your competitors are breaking the law. And they would spend a fortune on PPC to rank for that. And they would get business, of course. But sometimes it's, you know, you don't need to be really technical. It was just about building the case. And I tried many times, unfortunately did not work. And I left.
And what happened from there? So you went from the bigger agency to the smaller agency. I know you've done a bunch of different things because you've been judging for a range of different of the search awards and spoke at Brighton SEO. Like, how did that part of it come? Is that, through the agencies or through working with brands?
I think it was a bit of both. I think it has to come from you, like the desire to be, you know, out in this universe. You can be an SEO and just be at your desk and talk with your clients and not have a public figure. But all the people that I admire in SEO were public speakers. So for me, I kind of want to be like them. And to be like them, one of the steps to take is to become a public speaker, is to write on blogs, is to be active on social media and so on. Because I learned so much from SEO Twitter in its glory days. And for me, it was just a natural thing. Like I want to be like them. And this is part of the step, part of the process to get there. Not easy. Very scary to do public speaking. Now it comes naturally. It doesn't scare me as much, but the first time I was definitely very scared and I rehearsed, I don't know, 20, 30 times in my living room. I bought a clicker to like create the scenario as good as I could do. So
good stuff.
I think all of this just came from admiring people and wanting to be as good as them. And that's how I keep doing public speaking or being on podcasts or writing on blogs and so on.
Good, good. I think that's the interesting thing around that is it's that confidence in your point of view. Like most SEOs have got a very clear philosophy on the way they execute SEO and where they think it's going. Lots of SEOs also, frankly, are introverts, so they're not as confident to bring it out. But if you've got that, if you're a good SEO, you've got a pretty firm point of view, even if it changes over time because everything's evolving. But to have that confidence to actually step up and go, okay, I'm going to write about this. And then I'm going to speak about it on stage. And then I'm going to get in the podcast and have people press me on it and challenge me on it. Like that's a different level of, and I like the progression there because writing, okay, cool. It's just out there. on stage and in a podcast conversations, like there are different levels of confidence.
That is true. There. Yeah, that is true. Yeah. I don't know. I find it enjoyable. Coming from the media side and, you know, being a journalist interviewing people, it's interesting to be on the other side as well. And I remember back in the days looking at a magazine and say, look, I have this little square here with all this album reviews, this little bit here, it's mine. And it's a good feeling. And now we don't care about magazines anymore. Like I want to send a link to someone for them to see it. But now I open Spotify and I have a playlist with all the podcasts that I was a guest on. And it's also a good feeling. So, it helps you to keep building that confidence and keep pushing for more.
For sure. That's funny. The album reviews. That's like always the in to music journalism is writing those. And what I used to love is the CDs you'd get. There'd be a list. They'd be like, all of these releases are coming. Let me know what you want. And I love getting those packages of the CDs that you didn't have to pay for because you're reviewing it.
Yeah, that was very nice.
So much fun.
That was very nice. You would get sometimes before it was released. They're like, oh, that's nice. It's a good feeling as well to have access to something early. And you sit there for hours. You're like, oh, this guitar is doing this. I like this change. I like this lyric. And you keep analyzing things. Like I'm not a musician, but I would still like spend hours trying to find the words and a way to describe something. It's an interesting exercise, and it's nice to be on the other side now to be the subject of the conversation.
I think it's also from I've never really had this thought before, but that kind of creative analysis of something creative, like in being able to describe it really clearly, it's got to help your ability as a communicator through your whole career. Like all of a sudden you're trying to connect all this technical SEO work you do to business, like business metrics. And how do I paint a picture with my words in a way that's going to connect? So I love all these stepping stones that help, and without even realizing it, they help you in your career.
Yeah, no, I think definitely this being a journalist has helped me a lot in the SEO career. And even at Indeed, I think my manager noticed this very quickly because I started as an SEO manager. And after a month and a half, more or less, the person who was the SEO product manager decided to leave. And even though I was in the company for a short time, he asked me like, do you want to take over his role? At least he told me like, you communicate things well, like you're explaining technical things on a way that is digestible and actually makes sense for people. So they thought you're going to be a good person to translate all of this engineering thing into actions and test how things are going and actually, report on the impact of things as well. That became a challenge over time, but I enjoyed the having been, being offered the position and working with developers and understanding what a SEO product manager would do. It wasn't a planned career move. I didn't even know this was a thing until it came to me. And now it's a title that I want to keep with me. And, I enjoy very much what I do. I'm really proud of the work that I do and the product mentality that I brought to SEO as well.
So how would you define that title, an SEO product manager?
Yeah.
For those that are here.
So I think as an SEO product manager, you're dealing a lot with engineers, but you are building cases to build things. So let's say if you want to do an internal link module, right? Internal link, the secrets that everybody knows about in SEO. Sure, you want to add a bunch of links on this page that point to the other page. Is it actually doing something for you? And once you put the product mentality, you start dealing with different things. So I need to know how many pages are we going to cover? Do these pages have space to grow? How much they can grow? How much is it going to cost? Which pages we should have in here? And will this actually have an impact in sessions or in people applying for jobs or whatever the metric that you have? So I think I spend a lot of time building those cases. Every initiative or every new piece of work that I do, let's call like any big piece of work, will start with a business case. So I've been already one now for 2 weeks, talking with different teams, understanding how to access different APIs from different products and so on. So I think there's a lot of work that goes before you actually start building something. And I find this very fascinating. I've been spending a month talking with different teams, people that I don't know at Indeed, that I never worked with before, trying to get answers from them, how they do things and what is the quality of data in this point or in that point, just to build a case. And sometimes I build a case, and when I'm getting towards the end, I realize this is not good, or this is nice, this is, you know, shiny and exciting, but I will not be able to prove an impact from this. So an idea might just die before you actually start doing it. But I think it's a lot of this product mentality to build something, test it, keep changing. I built an internal link module and it's working well, but can we do it better? Can we change the pages that appear here? Is there a different logic? Is there a way to make it more relevant for people that are coming to these pages so they can actually use this information a little bit more? So even when something is a win, you can keep pushing to see, can I make this a bigger win?
Very cool. So when you mentioned you started there in another role, then you moved into the product role, which you're loving. Tell me about the team that you're working with. Like, is it, how's the SEO team structured?
Yeah, so we have different teams for each product. We have probably around 10 SEOs, and within each group, you're going to have different setups, but you're always going to have engineers. You might have content people. You always have UX as well. And something that I had no idea that we actually had it or need to have is, are people looking after accessibility. So there were things that I wanted to do at some point, and we started building it and got to a problem to say, okay, this is not working in certain device types, or it doesn't work on screen readers. We're not going to release this. And so it's interesting, once you start getting deeper into the structure, you realize that a few things have so many layers and different people that are involved with that. It's not as simple as just pushing a button and, you know, doing for quote unquote SEO reasons. Each team will have its own structure with SEOs and different stakeholders.
So when you moved into that product role, what were, let's say, the first 90 days in that role? Like, where did you have your biggest impact? Or did you have some ideas? I've got some ideas to start building a business case straight away. Or was it, I need to ask a bunch of questions? Like, I'm curious what your first big traction was.
Yeah. So I have a really good story. I'll give you the step-by-step, but I have a really good story that on my first week, someone from UX approached me to say, oh, you're the one who's replacing this person. So I have a few ideas that I want to run by you. And she had this list of ideas. And I'm like, I'm still trying to think in, like, what are all the tickets that are on the backlog, and how does the sprint work, and what are the story points, and how this working with engineers thing work. And after a few days, reading all of her documentation and reading everything that the person, the previous SEO left for me, I realized that there were similar ideas that were happening in SEO and in UX. And what she was doing was, she was already pitching her idea to me because she knew there was an SEO idea that wanted to do something similar.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that's one point that I really appreciate working with people that have passion for what they do, because the idea she had in mind was way better than the SEO one. We wanted to build a couple of pages and do some, you know, manual checking on those. And she had a whole system using the company's taxonomy and using, you know, similar elements that we use across the whole company to identify a type of a job and a location and different things that was like, this is way better than what it could do. I wasn't even aware that all of these things existed. And so for me was, let UX build all of this, I can build other things. And it's been a year. She doesn't even work on the same product as me anymore, but I'm collecting all this benefit because we're still developing this in different areas. But it was interesting to sit with someone that doesn't work in SEO, but had an idea that I'm pretty much just using all of that work and applying on SEO things. I think it's very fascinating when you find this kind of people or this mentality that you can just borrow something that someone is doing and take it for you, use all of that without having to do all the work yourself or duplicate that work.
Totally. It's also just a very key when I'm listening to that story as you tell it now, like the key part is you just want the best result. Like ego aside, like whose idea is this? Which department's going to run with this? It's just like, here's an idea and you're just objectively going, well, that's way better than the way we're doing it or we're planning to do it. So you run with it and it's going to help me in my job anyway. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, I tried to do this in the agents inside and it would have happened from time to time, like would have some good conversion with PPC people and say, hey, maybe we'll spend money on this or like, how can we build a strategy together? But I think on a bigger company, when there are a lot of moving pieces and every group has a resource and a say, it's easier to have that integration.
Totally. It just reminds me of we've got a client, long story short, our contact at the client used to work with, I don't want to get too detailed, but basically she was saying, I hope you guys don't mind, but I'm going to bring lots of ideas from my last agency that worked similar to, I think could work here. Like, I don't want to be that person. And I'm like, bring them on. Like, we you know, all the ideas, just bring them on. Anything that won, that was winning, like, we are totally going to steal it and use it because, you know, if we're not open to new angles and new ideas, like, and if we only want to just take ownership of everything, geez, we're not going to get very far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, ideas are there, like people will transform them, right? Like we can pick something that you learned on SEO Twitter. You want to test yourself. Maybe it doesn't work exactly the same way, but you need to find your angle. And you still took something from there and something from another place to build your own thing.
Exactly.
But to keep talking about my first 90 days, because we completely derailed about this one story, I spent a lot of time understanding how the engineers worked, looking at the backlog of things that we had. I didn't try to reinvent the wheel and come up with my own project. There were things that were in movement and I just kept going with them until I could understand like what kind of things I could do. And, you know, we finished a lot of these projects that were already ongoing. Some were MVP, or we released as an MVP to gather that attention and see if it would actually work. And if they work, then we could continue developing V2, V3, and so on. But a lot of time understanding how the team works. And I think that was huge because I never worked so well with the engineers like I work now. You know, I'm on the daily stand-ups. I understand what are the other things they have to do. Understand their struggles with tickets that sometimes have to happen that are not part of our core work, but it was, you know, it's a mandatory activity. We need to upgrade a platform or something like that. And knowing that and knowing their capacity and the stress and the things they have to do, it also helps you to manage your expectations. So when, you know, I come to sprint planning and I don't say, here are the 10 tickets that I want then. It's like, okay, can we do 5? Like, let's finish this project. So we have 3 main things going. Until we finish at least one of these, it doesn't make sense to bring more things down. Like, this bug can wait, you know, another month until we finish this or to finish that. So within this first 3 months, I learned how they work and started getting familiar with them and their ways of working, their style, and getting close with people as well. I think that's huge once you actually get some sort of friendship going. And it's not about faking a friendship, like I'm going to pretend I'm your friend. Like, you know, you get to know people, you know where they're from, you know what they like to do. There's an engineer that was even checking the my football team in Brazil. When I went on holidays, I came back. He's like, oh, I saw you guys won the national league. It's like, you know, that's caring for each other. And the same way, like if I see that they're stressed with things, I say, hey, can I solve this way? Or this ticket, this is a nice to have. I know you have a lot of stuff on the plate. Let's just remove this one. Let's even remove from the backlog, because the chances that are someone will mess up with this are very, very small. And even if they mess up, it's not a big problem. So spending the time learning how people work, getting to know the style and how the team works, that was huge for me to do a proper work that I do now.
For sure. And it makes sense. You know, the best teams out there have, you know, relationships that have been built, that are bonded through stress, then the trust levels go up and you're just much more likely to go into bat for someone else. You're much more likely to believe or to trust in their, you know, in their wisdom to take a certain direction, because you know them well, you know their integrity, and you back their expertise. So that relationship forming is huge. I'd like to know, what were some of the barriers though? Like, what were some of the tougher things in pushing things forward within a huge organization like Indeed?
I think the biggest shock that I had was at the end of my first years, so at the end of 2022, we had released a few big things, and you could see that the traffic was going up and people were applying for more jobs. So conversions were going up, and the person that was leading the product team at the time, I did a presentation for her at the end of the year. It's like, oh, we did this, and this. And she looks back at me after half an hour of talking. It's like, yeah, but all the traffic is going up. How do we know this is happening because of the things that he did? Maybe they would go up anyway. You know, we have more people applying for jobs, more people searching for jobs. We have more pages being built. So it's natural that this traffic will go up. And that kind of crushed me for a few days. I was afraid I wouldn't get engineering resources for the next year. And you know, how I'm going to prove all of this and whatnot. And then talk with my manager. He said, why don't you talk with this other team? There's a team internally that does causal impact analysis and all different types of analysis. And this is essentially picking a control and a test group. So a test group will be all the pages that were affected by your initiative. And a control group are the pages that were not affected by it. You're going to go back 1 year, find those two groups should be moving the same direction, let's say traffic. If they go up and down around the same, that's how you find a proper control group. And and then we went back and I could prove that some of those things that I was working on, those pages actually grew more than the rest of the website. So
perfect.
That is like, okay, now this was like mind-blowing for me, because we are full of it depends on SEO, and you know, we observe a lot of things and we say them, and they might not be happening for the reasons that we think they are. Later, I've seen things that I thought this is going to be bang on, this is going to work great, and it gave me a 2% incremental traffic increase, and things that when we're almost ready to release that I thought, okay, this is not going to work, I'm just going to forget about it. Those were the big hits. So it is, but I only know after testing, because, you know, conversions and traffic can be so messy that without having those two groups, it's hard to isolate that impact. And you can argue a billion things, algorithm updates and competitors and other things, but I think this is the best method that I've seen, that it compares changes that you made on a page. And for me, it's been mind-blowing. I want to test everything now. I already start building things with this MVP mindset. We're going to do this for 1,000 pages. We're going to find a control group. If this works, here's the second version. Now I'm going to use that work from the UX girl from a year and a half ago. Now I can plug this in on the V2 of this initiative, and then you'll start building a lot of things that they only make sense for your company. and with the resources that you have. Like if I went to work on another niche tomorrow, I would still bring all the methodology, but I wouldn't be able to say, let's do exactly the same thing because you don't have the same page types, you don't have the same data points. But yes, proving the impact beyond SEO, keywords are up or traffic is up, that was my biggest challenge that I had and I still have, but now I know the steps to get there. Sometimes it doesn't work the way you believe, but at least the methodology is in place.
And it's interesting too, around, you know, sometimes those tests that you're just like, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to slice out a little part of the site to test this, but I'm so confident it's going to scale and I can't wait to see those results come in. And then you get those little bumps. And then there's some other things, especially on huge sites where it's, oh, look, just make a tiny little change here. And you see these massive outsized,
yeah,
especially on enterprise, like on those enterprise sites where you have these global changes, which might seem really small, which can have a huge impact.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's fascinating. Like if I look back at the start of last year and the things that I had in the roadmap, the ones, the smaller ones, had more impact than the big ones.
Very cool. So obviously there's been some big successes and you've had some challenges, which you've managed to be able to build yourself a methodology to get around moving forward. What do you see as specific to Indeed? What are some of the keys for future growth from an SEO perspective?
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to explore now is what are all the new ways that we can use to grow using the data that we have. Like we have a lot of information about jobs that are open and people that are applying for jobs and where they're applying from and that kind of stuff, which I find it very interesting. So how can we transform all of this data into something that is useful to people? We have some of these page types, like you can see what's the average salary of a nurse and what are the jobs that are open, but they're probably... other ways to explore all of this to make this type of information even more exciting. And I think like this is where I'm trying to uncover new things now.
Very cool. Very cool. That's also, at least at this point, something that humans are going to do a lot better than AI. Like I think AI is going to be pretty good at churning out your top 10 this, your top 10 that. But when it comes to actually thinking through, you know, from a job seeker's perspective, all the different things that impact the way that they search, the time, there's a range of different data points, as you mentioned, being able to solve those problems sounds like a pretty exciting part of what's going to be coming next.
Yeah. And a lot of this, it's like unique information that is happening right now. Like you can't AI all of that. You can if you have the information, but you can't go to a ChatGPT and find what are, you know, the trending jobs for this month, because we know what is actually happening. And so that's, you know, I think there's still an edge for companies like Indeed and many others to find their angles and find what are they really good at that the AI or LLMs can't just spill something and try to compete with you.
Excellent. Okay. We're going to get into now, Gus, just a great conversation. Really interesting. Love the journey. Love your learnings from that journalism background to where you are today from a product perspective and building these new MVPs and figuring out how to test them. Like it's just really inspiring to hear. So I'm sure lots of our listeners will be very motivated to keep trying to progress themselves and find an organization that helps them develop. We are going to get into our Vox Pop, which we ask every guest. But I've got one question I have to ask, just from a former music journalist or former music journalist. Who was the one act that you got to interview that you were just, you had them on a pedestal and then you interviewed them and it was a good, I'd like to hear a good story, not one that disappointed you.
So I am really into hardcore punk rock bands. They're mainstream-ish. Like they may do Saturday Night Live on TV in the US, but they're not filling stadiums. And there was one band called Amberlin from US. I don't know exactly where in US they're from, that I was a huge fan. And they were coming to Brazil. And I asked my manager, like, can I interview them? And yeah, sure, you know, interview whoever you want. It's not going to bring a big audience. You know, they're playing for, I don't know, 800 people to concert. But for you as a fan to see this relatively small band come and see play in your city, it's a big thing. So I interviewed them before, and I think was probably the first, maybe the one of the few times that I put my fan hat. I was shaking a little bit. I had my English wasn't too good at the time, but I had all the questions ready, and I had deep questions because I knew the band. So we're talking about lyrics and about, you know, when you release this album or something that was in a video clip, like, you know, something that you're only gonna ask if you're an actual fan. And I could see I was over the phone recording the call with Christian. And I could see my boss on the other side just laughing at me, like, look at this fan. And I met the band later. They were very friendly, very nice. Took a picture, went to backstage and went to both concerts they did. So I've had other moments that I was disappointed to meet a musician. This was not one of these cases, but I think was a very special moment for me.
Very cool. Cool. Thanks, Gus. Okay, let's get back onto SEO. I just had to ask that. We're going to get into our Vox Pop. So I'm going to ask you a question. I just want the first thing that pops into your mind. Ready, set?
Let's do it.
Which previous Google algo change still keeps you up at night?
None keep me up at night these days, but Penguin kept me up in 2012 or 2014, I believe. I had just started on a new job, and a month later, we lost a bunch of traffic, and I was afraid that I would lose my job, and it was also my move to the Netherlands, so there were a lot of things in play. It was never at risk. My boss was, you know, this is business. We'll come back, and in fact, we came back, but I was more worried than him.
What is your favorite non-obvious software tool that you use every day to research or to execute?
I use a variation of SQL every day. We have a lot of databases that we can pull information from. So even things like page titles or bot visits or tons of things that we get from crawlers or from other paid tools, I can just query them. And I spend that's the tool that I spend most of my time on. I'm on SQL all day.
Got it. Gun to your head, which do you prefer, content or links?
Where I'm going to link to if I don't have a good piece of content. So content, always.
What's the most effective link building technique that you've used in the past?
The one that worked the most for me, and also being a journalist, digital PR was always my go-to strategy. Try to find a story with data. Did infographics back in the days, and quickly realized that the infographic did not matter. The story that was there behind, that's what mattered. They got my infographic and didn't use it. They copied all the information, made their own infographics. But it was an interesting learning to make sure that the data was interesting enough to turn into a story. So digital PR.
Is the skyscraper technique still relevant in 2024?
I couldn't tell you because I actually never did it myself. I would guess that no. I see a lot of the old school still happening, and I see a lot of tries. You know, we get guest posts and messages every day, everywhere. And I don't know if it works. I haven't tried it myself. I remember reading about it and thinking it was a great idea, but I never had a chance to do it myself.
Cool. What do you love most about SEO?
I think the wide range of problems that we have to deal with and all the different solutions that you can find. Like, someone can fix everything, or not fix everything, but you can do a lot and get results with links. You can do a lot with content. You can do a lot with technical SEO. So just all the paths you can take to achieve a similar goal, I just find that fascinating.
You probably overlapped with this next question a bit, but how do you apply SEO principles to your daily life?
That's a good question. I try to I think the MVP thing is my way to approach everything. So like a silly example, we are painting one room in my house that is going to be our office, but we don't have time during the week to do all the painting. So yesterday I just covered all the floors. Okay, today I have time to cover the floor, so it's all covered. It has tapes all around. Next day I don't have time to paint, but I can go to the shop and buy the paint and buy the roll. So that one. So, you know, this is, it's almost like working on a sprint, right? On this 2 weeks, we have 2 weeks to complete this. So every day you do a little bit, you do a whole task from start to end. And I do that in SEO and I do that on my day to day.
Work from home life versus office life versus hybrid life. What's your preference?
Hybrid, which is what I have now. But the caveat for me is that I don't have to go to the office. I can go, and I go when I feel like it. All my team is in US, so if I'm there or if I'm at home, nobody's seeing that. So I have that flexibility. I go there for the free coffee and for a walk into the city. I live in the suburbs now, so it's a nice change of scenery and all, you know, coffee and food. So hybrid life, but I do miss a little bit of that office life where you can meet people one-on-one and you can actually discuss things instead of typing. So hybrid, even if I go somewhere else, hybrid would be my ideal scenario.
Got it. Last question. What do you think is the best for brands when it comes to their SEO team? Agency versus in-house or a combination of both?
For a brand... So you mean, let's say for Indeed, is it better to have an in-house team or to have in-house an agency?
I guess that's
So
that would be a big brand, but yeah.
Right now, I would say in-house is better because I see a lot of things that I couldn't see as an agency before. Mm. But depending on the case, I've also worked in-house with an agency and... I burned my tongue because I was sure they weren't going to be any good. And it was a one-man show, and he was amazing. He was really good.
Ooh, I love that.
So I was like, I don't know, this guy, never heard his name before. It's probably going to be bad. And months now, I was collecting on the successes of things that he started building. I would keep giving the credit back to the agency. So... it depends. If you are in the on the middle, if you can't have a big team, then a good agency will give you amazing support. If you're too big, that things are too nuanced and complicated to navigate, I would have all my team in the house.
Love it. That's very sound advice. Gus, thank you so much. Really great conversation. Just enjoyed all of it. So thank you for being a very engaging and giving guest. As we mentioned before, you do lots of speaking gigs, you're on podcasts and stuff. What's the best place for people to follow you to just get abreast of where you're at and to connect?
Yeah, I'm on Threads. I'm on Twitter, X,
what
a name. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. And so you just find at Pelogia or at Gustavo Pelogia in all of these places. And on my website, guspelogia.com. So I'm on all of these places almost every day.
Great. We'll make sure we get those links in the write-up for this episode. Thank you, Gus.
Cool. Thank you.
No worries. So that was another episode. Really fascinating conversation with Gus Pelogia. I really hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did today, especially, you know, the journalism background moving into all the fun technical product-led stuff he's doing now. If you've enjoyed this conversation, I'm going to say it again. We always love your reviews. Write us 5 stars. Even better, subscribe so you can keep listening to more of these. I'm going to be in your ears again in 2 weeks' time with another SEO success story. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.